Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Friends, we have come to the end of a long journey. The American people have spoken, and they have spoken clearly. A little while ago, I had the honor of calling Senator Barack Obama to congratulate him. Please.
Oh, what an opening. What an opening. Well, here it is. There's some good news, and there's some bad news. The good news is that homosexual marriages was tossed out in three states. And if you look at that measure alone, you realize that the victory by Barack Hussein Obama was not a mandate to move to the left so much as it was a mandate to get away from George Bush and the corrupt Republican Party of today. Homosexual marriage was tossed out in three states, and here's the subtext that you're not going to read in any of your newspapers, but Michael Savage does the hard work for you. You're not going to read this anywhere, but you have to go onto my website to see what I found. An exit poll in California found that black voters who overwhelmingly voted for Obama overwhelmingly backed heterosexual marriage. They were key players in a ban on homosexual marriage. And this is interesting. It's extremely interesting, and you're not going to read this anywhere else. Now, the big losers are Newt Gingrich and his type. They may as well just disappear. These bloated, old-line frauds are out of business. Big losers are Newt Gingrich and his type, Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, and Sean Hannity. Now, why do I say it? Yes, Rush and Sean are my competitors. The reason they're big losers is because they are too closely tied to George Bush and the Republican machine, as is Fox News. No matter how they've tried to position themselves as fair and balanced, everyone knows they're not fair and balanced. And if they were truly a conservative network, I wouldn't be saying this, but they're not. The big winners are Michael Savage and CNN, believe it or not. Now, how in the world could I say that? How could I say that the big winners are Michael Savage and CNN? I have been a designated, genuine, independent conservative for the 15 years I've been in radio. I've never varied on my borders, language, and culture message. And by the way, if the Republicans are ever to win anywhere again, they had better get rid of these frauds, these lobbyists, these phonies, these racists who have run them off the road. And they better start appealing to their base. John McCain is a shame. John McCain is a disgrace. I'm calling him John McShame. John McShame is a disgrace to his family name as far as I'm concerned. Now, why do I make such a harsh statement? Because he's a sellout. He was a sellout through and through. John McCain may as well have been a turncoat working for the Democrats. Here he joined up with the wonder, Ted Kennedy, to try to make illegal aliens citizens. When President Bush proposed a $700 billion taxpayer rescue plan for the Wall Street criminals, McCain not only approved, he left the campaign trail to check it off. Really thrilling. Great idea with a conservative base, McCain. He spit in your face with that. And by the way, the Republican Party is so corrupt and bankrupt that, thank God, Elizabeth Dole got thrown out by an unknown. It's long overdue that that old hag go work for Dubai with her husband. Goodbye, Elizabeth. Bye-bye, Elizabeth. Say hello to Dubai. Phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. Here are the headlines on michaelsavage.com. McCain throws the presidency. Stealth Marxist ushered in. I stick by those words. Number two, homosexual marriage tossed out in three states. Did you know that? Oh, you wouldn't read that in the homosexual-owned media. But homosexuals lost big time in California. They lost big time in Arizona. They lost big time in Florida. And the subtext is that African-American voters who overwhelmingly supported Obama, as you would expect, also overwhelmingly rejected homosexual marriage because they are very family-oriented. That's very important for you to understand. Worst campaign ever, John McCain? No, the worst candidate ever, John McCain. He ran a campaign that reflected who he is. Ralph Nader, we'll deal with him later. Nebraska banned affirmative action. Did you know that? Nebraska has banned affirmative action. Again, indicative that America has not moved to the left. America ran away from the stinking corrupt Republican Party, but they didn't run to a left-wing policy-making machine. How do I say that? They rejected homosexual marriage in three states. They banned affirmative action in Nebraska. Affirmative action may be banned in Colorado. And I'm trying to tell you there's no mandate for a leftward movement in America. That doesn't matter what I say, because the Democrat Party is going to be hijacked by the far left, just as the Republican Party was hijacked by the Country Club Republican wing of the party, the old Nelson Rockefeller wing. The check pants Republicans hijacked the party, stole it from the conservative base, and I can assure you as I sit here, the left-wing radical wing of the or element of the Democrat Party will just as surely shaft the Democrats. They're not going to stay centrist, I can guarantee you. Now, last night, I was on a boat. Last night, I threw a party for 110 loyal friends on San Francisco Bay. We had to keep it quiet because we didn't want to be bothered by anybody. And there were a few high points from it, which I'm going to tell you about, and I'm going to play for you. On the show today, I called into WOR in New York on the back of the ship, and I gave, I think, a very rousing, I should say, interview on a cell phone on the back of the boat. And even though I had been two glasses of wine into the cruise, because it was good Italian red wine, or it was one Italian and one from California, I'm not sure, I did a good job. You'll hear no slurring, no missing, no misfiring. My V16 is still firing perfectly. And while others chug along on a hybrid four-cylinder flathead, I'm doing a V16 show today, I can guarantee you. If you'd like to tune in today or call in, tune in, call in, and drop out. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. We have many things to talk about. You know what? Your world didn't change today, did it? Did your life change at all today because Obama won? What really happened? Nothing. There were no riots. Nothing happened. I did exactly what I do on most days. I bicycled to a mall. There was a farmer's market. I observed the liberals eating food for free and pretending that they like the minority while they're taking food from the Mexicans and the Indians who are struggling to pinch pennies and make a few dollars. And there were those, you know, I can't finish the sentence. I looked these liberals right in the eye, white liberals, the Obama gay marriage type, and they're going from stand to stand munching the free food. They're eating the free food, and I'm sitting there staring them in the eye with such hatred you can't imagine. And they didn't just take a bite. They took as much as they could get, and they bought nothing. You know, people like that disgust me. They sicken me. So when the couple went on to the Mexican to take his fruit for free and saying to each vendor one after the other, "Ooh, very good. Ooh, that's really good. I'll be back." You know the kind of lib I'm talking about. They make my flesh crawl. Self-righteous frauds. I said to the Indian man, he said, "Would you like some bread?" I said, "No, thank you. I don't like eating for free." I said, "Does it bother you that people come and eat for nothing and buy?" He's, "Oh, yeah, yes, but I have to do it." I just shook my head. I said, "You know, I grew up poor. My father had a little stall in a market." I said, "I don't like people abusing poor people." He said, "Well, there's nothing I can do." He said, "That's the way I have to run my business." Shame on you phony white shakers. You sicken this country. Then I went over to another place and I shook hands with a Fijian guard, and I said, "Nisambula," as I say every day when I see the Fijian guard, because I speak a little bit of Fijian, and he said back to me, "Bula Vanaka," and I walked along. I walked along next to an African-American. She's not African-American. She's African-African. This is one of the most beautiful women you've ever seen in your life. I don't mean in a movie star way. If you look at this woman who sells some kind of ointments from Africa, her native country, I mean, you're looking into the face of one of the most astonishingly beautiful people you could imagine. So pure in her beauty, it was amazing to me. It's almost hard to look at her. I'm not in love with her. I'm just telling you how beautiful this woman was. And she loves me. I mean, in the way of just as a person to a person, she could look right into my soul. She doesn't know whether I'm a conservative or a liberal. She doesn't care. You know what she sees? Me. You know what she sees? Me. Unlike the rotten, stinking socialist communists who live in this country to destroy this country, she sees me. Now let's take the callers. And then I'll come back and I'll play the WOR call-in. We'll play John McCain. Isn't it a shame to have seen this loser give that speech? You know what John McCain should have done? John McCain should have given a concession speech for sure. But he should have said, we have a big job ahead of us. We have to watch very carefully that Barack Hussein Obama does not shift this country to the left. We've got to make sure that Barack Obama's cronies do not turn this into a Marxist dictatorship. We've got to make certain that illegal aliens are told to go home, that although they may be nice people, the lifeboat is full. We've got to make sure that the crooks on Wall Street go to prison and that their assets are seized. We've got to make certain that family values are upheld. But John McCain is such a clueless dunce that he doesn't deserve any more attention. Yes, I'll repeat what I said at the beginning of this monologue today in the Savage Nation. The big losers are blowhards like Newt Gingrich and his type, who ran the Republican brand off the road. Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, too closely tied to the Republican brand. Big winners, Michael Savage. Why? You know I've been an independent for 15 years. I don't have to tell it to you again. CNN is a big winner. CNN came out way ahead in the cable race. The other two are, frankly, they've marginalized themselves. I'll be right back. Savage. It is the one and only Savage Nation, the Energizer Bunny here. I don't know. I don't feel angry. I don't feel depressed at all. I feel nothing. I do feel something. I feel great. I feel great that this horrendous nightmare of George Bush is over. Of course, there may be a new nightmare beginning, but I'm used to that. We had 8 years of the Clinton nightmare, then 8 years of the Bush nightmare, so why should these 8 years be any different? You know, we understand that corporate interests run the country, and I have nothing against corporations in general. Corporations can be great. They're job providers. But when the corporations have lost any connection to the nation that has given them everything, I hate corporations like that. I like family corporations. I like American corporations. I don't like transnational corporations. They are the danger to the future of this country. They own the election. They own both parties. So it's a matter of window dressing to a certain extent. And you have to be focused on that. Incidentally, please, if you want to get a free copy of Psychological Nudity, go to the website now and look up the 75 stories, because if I say to you, name one story, you get a book. If you won't name it, I'm not giving you the book. Also, I have only a 3-week supply of books left. Period. End of story. You want the book? Buy it. Want it for the holidays? Buy two. I love the book. I'm proud of the book. Teddy was on the boat. I introduced Teddy to the crowd. They loved him. What a good dog. What a great dog. I don't think he peed anywhere on the boat. I wouldn't know. I mean, I didn't watch him every second with 110 people and speeches and light bulbs and flash cameras and the boat and the wind and making every 10 minutes an interview and wine. I really don't know. Actually, now that I think about it, there was a little wetness under that. Darn, he did. Well, all right, that's his. You know, the ships used to have what's called a poop deck on them. I don't know why you can't train a dog to go to the back of the boat. Well, that's a separate story for another time, but nobody was depressed when Obama won, and it was pretty early. There was John McShane giving the concession speech. I'm surprised he didn't give the concession speech 2 months ago when he was finally told what his role was, to be the fall guy. All right, John, here's how it works. You're going to run to the end. You're still strong. You got a good heart. But you're taking a fall. You're going to take a flop. At a certain critical juncture, you're going to listen to the Democrats at work for you, and here's what you're going to do. When your boss, Bush, tells you for the bailout, you're going to give up the campaign. You're going to run back and vote for it because you're starting to pull too far ahead in the polls. Yeah, John. A few other things we got in store, John. Don't worry. You'll be rewarded. And the guys who work for you, don't worry, they're going to work for Obama as lobbyists, John. And when it's all over, John, and you lose your seat in Arizona, John, in a couple of years, there's a job as a lobbyist waiting for you. You'll go to work as a lobbyist for Obama, John. New York, Kevin, on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. You've been right on point, I think, in questioning whether John McCain really wanted to win. I often had told my friends, I said, I'll see if he wants to win when he makes his VP pick, and then he picks, you know, somebody unknown, and I'm like, just as you stated, he's throwing
the
election.
Well, you know, let's talk about that, because people are going to get mad at me, but I'll tell you the truth. The Palin pick was the worst mistake he made of all. Not that she herself is a bad person. She's a good person. What was McCain's strongest card? Experience. What was Obama's weakest card? Experience. How did he trump his opponent? By picking an inexperienced vice president. Also, somebody who was picked, who was so off the wall in terms of a pick that people thought he was doing it strictly for a political choice, and they lost faith in him there. He should have picked a rock-solid, you know, guy who's been around, someone everyone knew, someone with experience. You know, he's 72 years old. Everyone feared that if he died or, God forbid, got sick, they didn't want an unknown person with her finger on the nuclear trigger. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he was really running for this title, which I've coined, Lovable Republican Loser, title last held by Bob Dole.
My God, you're right. And look where Bob Dole wound up, Viagra and Dubai ports.
You stole one of my lines, but what's going to happen in January 2009, as it happened in January 2007, there's going to be a big ceremony at the White House, and Barack Hussein Obama will be giving a medal to the war hero, John McCain, just as the draft dodger Bill Clinton did in 1997, giving the Congressional Medal of Honor to Bob Dole.
I see what you mean. That's very, very smart. You're an astute guy, Kevin. I'm going to send you a free copy of Psychological Nudity, whether you get this right or not. Can you name one story you're dying to read?
One-Armed Frank.
You win a free copy of Psychological Nudity. Why One-Armed Frank? The breath?
I just.
Do you live near the Kosciuszko Bridge and you can smell the dead pigs?
thank you. I love it.
How's your mayor? How's your shameful mayor Bloomberg, who took away term limits and extended his term to then take away the real estate rebate, the real estate tax rebate? Wonderful guy, that Bloomberg.
Savage.
Doesn't today feel like the day after New Year's Eve for everybody in America? Am I the only one who knows that? I have such an incredible stethoscope to the heartbeat of this country. I mean, whether you like my politics tonight or not, you know I'm right about everything. Many of you don't even like my politics and you like me. That's interesting unto itself. But today feels like the day after, like New Year's Eve was last night and it's over. And thank God, it's already, can we get back to life? Did you hear how much they spent? Did you hear how much these bums spent? I love this. I mean, you'd expect it from the Republicans because you understand what they stand for. We don't have to even categorize it any further. Did you hear what this campaign cost? Huh? Did you hear what they spent? $5.3 billion. So you're going to tell me Obama cares about the poor. Yeah, he cares about. They think they're going to get a free radiator job or a new muffler job for nothing. They're going to pull into a muffler shop and it's on Obama. Yeah, have a new muffler system for your old car. Yeah, get a bag of groceries every day at the supermarket. It's on Obama. You know what you're going to get? Like my father would say, huh? Listen, you know what you're going to get? The same thing you've already gotten with a little window dressing. The 08 campaign cost $5.3 billion. That could have paid for a lot of mortgages, you know. So the big losers, Newt Gingrich and his ilk, you know, I'm tired of them, the frauds. And I name the others. I don't even want to name them again. They're not bad guys. They're nice guys, but they're too closely tied to the Republican brand. I'm the big winner, and so is CNN. And I'm not looking for a job. I don't want it. I don't need it. I'm not looking for it. I'm a guy who calls it the way I see it. In that sense, I'm the Casey Stengel of talk radio. Another big loser, by the way, are the pollsters like the Field Poll here in California. Remember they were the gay's going to win, gay marriage, win, is going to win, blah, blah, blah. I mean, the gays are going to win, and the marriage, blah, blah, blah. Come on. I've told you the field poll is an arm of the Democrat left. Why don't you listen to me? You don't have to agree with me on most things to understand that I'm like the uncle that you all once had or should have. You need an uncle like me in your house to keep you sane. Otherwise, you'll go insane altogether. You'll really go off the rails. You'll start gargling with poison and think that it's good for you. I'm the uncle that everyone used to have in their house. Every Sunday when families were real families, there'd be a dinner and everyone would get around the table. There was always an uncle like Michael around. And you'd argue with him day and night. And you hated him by the end of the dinner. You couldn't wait for the guy to leave and the night to be over. By Wednesday, you couldn't wait for the dinner again because you realized you needed him to keep yourself from going nuts because the only people you talked to were your friends who agreed with you. So I'm the Dutch uncle of talk radio. In Psychological Nudity, where I bear all. Oh, I want to talk about that. This came to me like in a revelation yesterday on the bicycle. I think good when I get oxygenated. I take a big dose of vitamin C. I go for a bike ride and it crosses Did you know that vitamin C crosses the blood-brain barrier more quickly than heroin? Now, I've never used heroin, but I am a trained scientist. And I don't think you understand the size of the molecule is so small that it crosses the blood-brain barrier, which is one of the most ingenious things God has ever developed for man. And the reason we have such a small opening in the blood-brain barrier is to prevent toxins from crossing into the brain tissue. God is so smart that he made a blood-brain barrier to prevent toxins that we ingest or inhale from easily crossing over that barrier into the brain. So large molecules generally don't cross rapidly into the brain, which is good. It's evolutionary intelligence. So heroin crosses the blood-brain barrier rapidly, which is why it's so addictive. It's a very small molecule. Okay. Vitamin C, which is derived from sugar, from sucrose, it's a derivative. It can be made from sugar. It acts totally differently than sugar. Crosses the blood-brain barrier very rapidly. So if I want to oxygenate my brain and get a high, I take about 2 grams of vitamin C, and then I take a bike ride. So I'm bicycling yesterday after a vitamin C bicycle dose, and the thought occurs to me that in my book, Psychological Nudity, which is largely autobiographical, none of the stories are dirty. There's not a dirty word in it. You say psychological nudity, you think I'm going to do what the dirt balls who have no brains and no education do. You think I'm going to do what those filth on HBO do, those low-life gutter rats? No. There's not one F word. There's not one B word. There's no need for it because truth is beauty unto itself. And if you have truth and beauty, you don't need a pornography. Do you understand that? Now, I want to finish this thought because I'm not going to say it again. I said, you know, people are going to say all you did was show the good side of yourself in this book, the family stories that are ennobling in somehow. You didn't show the dark side of Michael Savage. You didn't show the dark side of your parents. You didn't show the dark side of your life. That's right. I don't want to do the counterculture 1960s dark side. The world has enough of that garbage. I chose in this book to show the good side, the bright side, the right side, the side that we need in order to survive individually and as a nation. Did you hear what I just said to you? That's why this book is so brilliant. It shines like a beacon of beauty because it's a beacon of truth. Now, of course, this is a sales pitch, but on the other hand, it's also an insight that came to me yesterday, and I'm sharing it with you. I could talk about things that happened in my life, or what do you need to know about my internal garbage for? What do you need to know that for? What's it going to do for you? Well, what do you need to know? We all have that. So what? Where's the ennobling element of that? You need another film noir in your head. There's plenty of that garbage on television and the movies, and the people don't want to hear it anymore. I've given you the good. Not the good, the bad, and the ugly. You don't need the bad and the ugly. You got the bad and the ugly every time you turn on a television set. I'm giving you the good. I'm trying to restore something in this country through my writings and my show. Did you hear what I just said? And sometimes I get angry. I understand that. So what? Oh, by the way, your good friend Obama has given the stock market the biggest drop in history. Oh, yeah. Biggest post-election drop in American history because they're afraid of Obama's anti-business friends and orientation. So maybe you'll wind up playing dominoes and driving a 1955 Buick. I mean, things could be worse. That's what they've done in Cuba. All the dissidents were first silenced by the Charles Schumers of Cuba, the black-booted thugs like Schumer, who should know better, since he espouses being a big voice of the minority. Here is Schumer yesterday comparing people who he disagrees with politically with pornography. You hear me? Son of a gun like that. Bigfoot. So, anyway, you heard it. That's all. Now, in my book, Psychological Nudity, you know, got Dead Man's Pants, Tippy the Dog Dies and is Thrown in a Garbage Truck, Working on Cruise Lines and Electra, Love by the Sewer Plant, The Nympho in Alley Pond Park. But they're not dirty stories. Everyone remembers only if I end the stories, all I remember is Fat Al's Tuna, One Arm Frank, and Dead Man's Pants. One of my guests on the boat last night was a man of a total different background than me. I think he's from Las Vegas. He said he grew up poor and he also wore Dead Man's Pants. I couldn't believe it. Apparently, a lot of people were given Dead Man's Pants. Never talked about it. So I'm going to play One Arm Frank for you from page 43 of Psychological Nudity. Please play it now. And on top of it all, a one-armed Frank level Hal. Did I ever tell you about one-armed Frank? You haven't heard the one-armed Frank story. Do I have a moment? My father, I told you, was an antique dealer. May he rest in peace. So we would come home from... Well, he had a guy who came in with one arm. I don't know how the guy became one arm, but he, you know, you didn't know a lot of people with one arms in those days. Even today, they have a... I guess you don't know one-armed people today. They have a fake arm. But he had the arm sewed up, you know, in a suit. So, all right, you accept him. His name, though, was One Arm Frank. Because nobody hid reality in those days. Today it's like, oh, yeah, he's normal. He's just like a... In those days, it was One Arm Frank. Today it's like, oh, he's better than normal, man. He's special. Like, if you have one arm, you're better than a guy with two arms today. You know what I mean? If you have no arms and no legs, you're Superman in the politically correct world of today. But in those days, if you were missing an arm, that's what you would name, One Arm Frank. Whatever your anomaly was, that was your name. It made it easier for the average person to remember everybody. So One Arm Frank was a very sweet guy, but a breath on him. Now, I want to tell you, there are bad breaths, then there are very bad breaths, then there are medicinal problems. This had to be solved with a medicine that hasn't been invented yet. It was wintertime, and once in a while, my old man would drive One Arm Frank home, and I'd get stuck in the back. And One Arm Frank would get shot.
Throw it back.
Now, I want to tell you something. It could be minus 4 degrees in New York. You had a ride with all the windows open. Did you ever have a person like this, Greg? I'm serious, where it's medicinally like a medical problem, where he says anything and the car fills with a noxious fume where you don't know what to do. You know, are we going past the Trun's Meat Factory? No, we're not in Williamsburg. Did we run over a small furry creature that got caught in the muffler and shot up through the floorboard? Did I step on something on the way? No, it's Frank talking.
And I'm back live, and here we have an update for you. The update is there's no update. It's like the day after New Year's Eve on the Savage Nation. I mean, the only good news is that the stock market, which has been very nervous lately, had a heart attack today. I mean, had a nervous breakdown after Obama the socialist got elected. Oh, yeah, today he's George Washington today. But the market doesn't think he's George Washington. They think he's more like Fidel Castro. They're a little afraid of his anti-business record, you know. Now, if he appoints Larry Summers to the Treasury Department, or Paul Volcker. All right, so we'll have another, you know, stability. We'll have another crook running. Sorry. Another crook-like guy. How did Treasury secretaries get the right to rewrite laws and give their friends bailouts, handouts? Never saw anything like this. So the stocks took the biggest dump past an election, after an election in American history. That's all. Play Auld Lang Syne so they get the picture. The hangover. They're going to get the hangover today. All the celebrants in Chicago and San Francisco's Castro District, New York's Upper West Side, the old hags, the old liberal hags, driving around like they personally won something. The old hags have moved to Vermont to pollute Vermont. The white commies there. Those better days are behind them physically, if you know what I mean. Turn it off. They got the picture. They got the picture. All the hags who were wild sexual creatures in the 60s from New York, who are now, you know, way past that phase of their life. They couldn't give it away, so to speak. They moved to Vermont with the summer house and polluted the once beautiful. you say, well, are you being a megalomaniac? What influence can you have? Nobody ever refers to you. You don't exist, Michael. Well, go on to michaelsavage.com and take a look at the 49 million people who have voted on my website, and I can guarantee you that the listeners to this show will determine the outcome of the next election. I can guarantee it. And I didn't pick anybody yet, and I don't intend to. But I can guarantee you that the listeners will pick the next president of the United States of America. And I'm not even sure that that person is yet on the ballot. Savage. Well, we had an election yesterday. That doesn't mean the problems go away, said Kevin Rendino, a Plainsboro, New Jersey-based money manager who oversees $10 billion. He said, we still have an economic slowdown, and the stock market posted its biggest plunge following a presidential election as reports on jobs, et cetera, tied in with Barack Obama's policies, his stated left-leaning policies, higher taxes, more regulation started to set into Wall Street. So there we go already. You know, you think a miracle occurred. There was no miracle. San Diego, Rose, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. Thank you for taking my call. I'm Hispanic, and I was a dyed-in-the-wool liberal when I attended UC Berkeley. Now I'm a conservative, and I'm just devastated. Devastated.
Well, you should have been devastated before the election with the choice of John McCain. That was devastation enough, wasn't it?
Yes.
John McCain became the front runner, I knew it was over. And I endorsed him reluctantly last week. I had to because I didn't want to see a bigger victory than this. But the fact of the matter is McCain was a loser from day one. He's a shame. His name should be John McShame.
I agree. I totally agree.
What we need to do is get a conservative party. We need to get rid of the check pants, corrupt, old-line Republicans, the Rockefeller wing of the Republican Party destroyed this party. They did it once, and they did it again. The Newt Gingrich wing of that party has to go. The old line hacks, the lobbyists, the corruption needs to go. The stink needs to be let out of the carcass. Thanks for the call. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Obama can't, you know, no matter which way Obama turns, frankly, his presidency is already... It doesn't have a very good, you know, hope for it right now. Sure, he could sell hope to the dummies out there. What's he actually going to do for you? Where's he going to get the money from? Taxpayers like me will stop working. Then where are you going to get the money from? I mean, be realistic here. We needed a real Republican conservative. We didn't have one. All right, so they reserve Romney in the wings. Fine. And Romney, in favor of gay marriage, you're going to get a mixed bag with him as well. He also was bulldozed by the radical left. The only issue that Romney had going for him, he had two things that could have put him over the top if you want me to spend 30 seconds on it. Good looks and youth and business experience. Those would have easily beaten and trumped Obama, and he wouldn't have picked someone unknown like Palin. Excuse me. I know many of you are Palinites, but I'm not a Palinite, and I wasn't from day one. I thought it was a disastrous mistake. McCain shot himself in the only foot he had left. He was standing on one foot, and he shot that foot off with her. 1-800-449-8255. I'm telling you, there's good news out here. Affirmative action was banned in Nebraska. You're not going to read that in the left-wing newspapers. Who else? Black voters voted against homosexual marriage, 7 in 10. What does that say? They may want Obama for racial reasons, and even for economic reasons and for emotional reasons, but they're not ready for a total left-wing agenda. Another big loser here is any Newsom in California. This guy thinks he could be governor. He could be governor of a chicken plant in Petaluma. This guy tied himself so closely to the gay agenda that he's finished. Listen, I'm telling you, I know what's going on here. The California voters are not ready to embrace a total left-wing agenda. Newsom is finished politically. 1-800-449-MichaelSavage. You know what? New York City, W.R. Chesedey. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call, Dr. Savage. First of all, I'd say I agree with you totally. You are like that uncle that everyone fights with, but eventually realizes they tell the truth.
That's right. And they need that uncle in the living room, in the dining room on Sunday.
I also, there's a story that I've never heard you talk about that I'd like to hear you talk about. But first, let me say this, I think, to see if you think I deserve it, because I don't want anything for free unless I deserve it. A friend of mine posted images on a website and showed him in Union Square, and there's one of those big, massive American flags that you see in a football field. And everyone was celebrating under it. But what made me incredibly sad was that there were holes torn in it. There were stars hanging off of it. People were running through it, celebrating. And I think it just showed us exactly what this country has become. It's very sad.
Well, a lot of the Obama supporters hate this country. Let's not fool ourselves. Many of them are absolute subversives. And I can name 10 of them who hate this country and like to see it converted to a socialist economy, a Marxist socialist dictatorship. I can name 10 people, and they're very famous, who would like that to happen. They displayed their true colors, which were all in the shades of pink and red, during this election. You know, but I don't have to do that right now. I think you know who they are. What's the story that you never heard?
Well, I love food, and there's a story you mentioned called When Pasta Was Spaghetti.
Oh, well, I gave that. Actually, I wrote that poem in an airplane in a lightning storm over Cheyenne, Wyoming in 1985 when they thought the plane would go down. I ordered 4 more drinks and wrote this poem because I figured if the plane was going to go down, there was nothing I could do but enjoy the flight. And in those days, when you hit turbulence, you could ask for more drinks. Today, if you ask for an extra chiclet, they call security and tape you to a chair. You know what I'm saying? It was a different world in 1985 in an airplane. It was enjoyable. You hit turbulence. People were in a panic. I said, bring me 4 more of those little bottles. I was in first class at the time. I think I was going on a lecture tour. I got happy. I wrote a wonderful poem called When Pasta Was Spaghetti, and I read it at an Italian-American dinner here in San Francisco. I'll tell you what I'll do. When I come back, I'll play it for you. But, Cesare, you now win a free copy of what? Because you named the story instead of the title. What are you going to get a free copy of?
Psychological Nudity.
Bingo! Free copy of my great new autobiography goes out to Cesare. Available only on michaelsavage.com. Not sold in bookstores anywhere near you.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We have come to the end of a long journey. The American people have spoken, and they have spoken clearly. A little while ago, I had the honor of calling Senator Barack Obama to congratulate him. Please.
That was John McShane, the man who threw the presidency to permit a stealth Marxist to be ushered into the White House. In the minds of millions of Americans. After all, we can't forget what we learned. I mean, we still don't even know where he was born. That's a huge story. Where was he born? What about the fact that a week before the end of the campaign, he goes to Hawaii to visit his ailing grandmother who raised him, and sadly she dies the eve before the election. Lots of people have conspiracy theories about that one. Certainly it's worthy of inspection and investigation and discussion. After all, everything else is discussed and analyzed ad nauseum here in American politics, but not that one, not that big pregnant question about where exactly was he born. You'd think that would be a big issue. Well, no, let's sweep that under the rug, along with Bill Ayers, who was in, God knows, communist Chavez's country 2 months ago, hasta la victoria siempre, speaking communist dialectic in Venezuela 2 months ago, lives on the same block. Barack Hussein Obama began his presidency in Ayers' kitchen. No, we can't discuss that either, because the dunce John McShame told us that we shouldn't even think about that. And that's why John McShame is now on the ash heap of political history. My prediction is he will not get reelected. If he ever runs again in Arizona, he'll not get reelected. He'll be thrown out. The people in Arizona have seen through this fraud. They don't want another country club Republican. They want a Goldwater-esque borders language culture person, man, woman, black or white, Asian or Hispanic. They don't want any more of these white frauds, these sellouts. That's it. That's the whole story in a nutshell. That's what, at least it's one man's opinion. I am still entitled to my opinion, or have I lost the right to my opinion? I don't think so. Not at all. There is some good news out there, and you're not going to read it in your newspaper tomorrow because it's owned by the same losers. The big losers are Newt Gingrich and his ilk, Fox News for being too closely identified with the Republican Party, whether they want to accept that or not, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, not because they're not nice guys, they're genuinely good people, but they're too closely identified with George Bush, John McCain, and Republicanism, and they're going to be the big losers, along with all the newspapers. The mainstream media has taken a tremendous hit because of their sycophantic relationship with the Democrat Party. And the American people who voted for Obama include many conservatives who hated McCain's politics. The biggest winners are me, Michael Savage, because I'm a genuine independent conservative, and CNN. The other two cable networks are too, I would say, too marginalized because of their connections with one side or the other. So there it is. That's my opinion. 1-800-449-8255. Homosexual marriage was tossed out in three states. That should be a banner headline. It shows you that the country is not ready to move to the left. They were ready to throw out Bush. They're ready to throw out the wreckage of the Republican Party. They're ready to throw out the corruption of the Republicans in Congress, an out-of-touch White House, and spenders like this country's never seen. So they went to the other side saying, give him a chance. Maybe he's more honest. That's all it was. But they weren't ready to embrace homosexual marriage. Are you aware of the fact that by the latest exit poll in California, black voters who voted overwhelmingly for Obama, 7 out of 10 of them supported Proposition 8, which banned homosexual marriage. 7 in 10 black voters voted to ban homosexual marriage. Why? Because they're basically... They don't hate gays. Let me make that very clear. Nor do I. They do not hate gays. Let me make that very clear. Nor do I. But they were raised to believe that marriage is between a man and a woman because that's sanity. People should do what they want to do, as I say, but they should not be forced to have their lifestyle imposed on others. And the children deserve better than constant gay brainwashing. Everybody knows that. And that's why it won. Now, as for the big lie that being gay is identical to being black, that argument did not hold amongst black voters. The argument that current marriage laws somehow discriminate against homosexuals is actually a confusion. It's confusing discrimination against people with making distinctions among different kinds of behavior, according to Thomas Sowell, and I agree 100%. He said that blacks had to sit in the back of the bus because they were black. They were doing exactly what white people were doing, riding a bus. That is what made it racial discrimination. Marriage is not a right, but a set of legal obligations imposed because the government has an interest in unions that, among other things, have the potential to produce children, which is to say the future population of the nation. You hear this? You hear this? But to assert a right to other people's approval, okay, is not a right at all. None of us has a right to other people's approval. We have a right to disapprove of certain behaviors, certain so-called lifestyles. And the people spoke in three states. And it says that there's no movement to the left in this country. It's that simple. Sacramento, California. Tim, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm mad at Gavin Newsom. Who's going to stop this guy? He says now he doesn't have to pay attention to the Yes Prop 8. He's special. He doesn't have to pay attention to people.
Gavin Newsom is a marginalized figure. By tying himself so closely to the homosexual community, he has personally disavowed any chance of becoming governor. And so is Jerry Brown. I overheard liberals talking today as they were walking by. They're fuming at Jerry Brown for having twisted the measure itself. Believe me, the people are not that stupid. These politicians are the stupid ones. Newsom and Brown are on the ash heap of history. They're not going to go to the governorship because of this.
Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous. He's acting like he's some special person, doesn't have to pay attention to what the voters put in. I mean,
Gavin Newsom, any twosome Newsom, has marginalized himself from the beginning. If he didn't learn from this ballot measure that he bet on the wrong horse, then he has no right to even run for the governorship because he's going to wind up, well, he can do what he wants, but they're wasting their time. There is a silver lining to this election, Tim. You have to admit it. When you see that affirmative action gets tossed out permanently in Nebraska through a ballot initiative, when you see that homosexual marriage gets tossed out in three states, doesn't that give you some hope?
A little bit. Not much, but a little bit.
Well, then take a little bit, okay? Tim, if you can name one story you can't wait to read in Psychological Nudity, you get a free copy of the book. Name it.
The Dead Man's Pants.
Okay, I'll take it. Someone's got to come up with a new story, for God's sakes. It's a great story, but there are other ones. 1-800-449-8255. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So we had the worst Republican candidate in history, and also in modern history, and the worst campaign in modern history. And it looked to me almost like he was a fall guy. The Republicans knew that they had bankrupted America, and they wanted to throw it into the Democrats' hands. That's another concept that I've been working with. But it's past history, okay? The stock market falls today, the biggest post-election drop in history, for fear of this left-wing politician. Homosexual marriage tossed out in three states. Affirmative action banned in Nebraska. The country is not ready to move to the left, okay? Not economically and not socially. Now, last night, as I said, I had a party for 110 friends on a boat, San Francisco Bay. And I gave an interview during that cruise on the back of the boat after two glasses of wine to WOR. It's really good, or else I wouldn't replay it. Let's hear a piece of it right now. Go ahead, please.
Let's get reaction this morning, or this evening, I should say, from Michael Savage, host of the Savage Nation here on WOR. Michael, good evening.
Look, I'm on the back of a ship now. Honest to God, I'm with 110 friends on the back of a ship on San Francisco Bay, which is the most beautiful city in the world. And there are several Democrats here. We put tinfoil hats on them. We're drinking. We're eating. We have several former communists who understand which way we're going. They understand that the brothers Castro have finally found their ultimate plant in the American political system. But we don't care because eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow Obama may come.
Now, Michael, just how bad do you think America could be under an Obama presidency?
Well, you know, you're asking a dark question, and I'd rather not give a dark answer. How bad could America be under an Obama? Okay, there are all sorts of conspiracy theories, and I tend to believe them all. However, if you listen to Obama's statement that he wants to create a private civilian national security force bigger than the military, what the hell does that mean? What the heck does that mean? What does he mean by a private civilian security force bigger than the military? That's something that we haven't seen in America ever. We have a National Guard. We have state troopers. What does he have in mind? How did the media not ask this question of this candidate? That's the question.
Well, look, there are a lot of things that you brought out and a lot of people, conservative talk show hosts on radio, that brought out about Obama, and obviously none of that has stuck. I mean, it clearly, the American
people... just because it hasn't stuck doesn't mean Obama didn't say it.
No. I understand that.
Replayed it. I mean, if you got guys, ABC, CBS, and NBC, not playing what Obama himself is saying, of course it won't stick. The people are like children. They're not stupid, but they're, look, I was once a 17-year-old. I know how the average person thinks. They want to have a good time, or they're working hard, and they can't pay too much attention. So they say, young guy, young, vigorous, old man, old guard, old Republican, Bush 3, and they go for the young guy. I understand that.
Yeah.
But they
want
to listen to what the young guy is saying.
All right, let me ask you, Michael, what would a McCain presidency have been like? Would that be any better?
Close the door. Would a McCain presidency be any better? Listen, I don't know, but I know this. On one or two levels, I have to trust McCain more. One level, former military hero, flew jets, combat mission, shot down, survived it, didn't give up his buddies, didn't rat out America, suffered like a maniac for this country, the son of an admiral, the grandson of an admiral. I'll go with him any day over a guy who his only call to fame is shooting posters up on a bulletin board in Chicago. I don't trust Obama on national security. I have no reason to trust him. Reverend Wright, Bill Ayers was in Venezuela 2 months ago saying hasta la siempre, hasta la victoria siempre. What the heck is going on? The man lives on the same block. Obama started his political career in Ayers' house. And again, this is written off as someone he knew 20 years ago? Nonsense.
Well, a lot of people are comparing, even before he begins this presidency, although still a little premature, Obama to Jimmy Carter. I mean, do you see any similarities there?
Obama to Jimmy Carter, a rational statement. Jimmy Carter was a super president. Let's see what Jimmy Carter did. Jimmy Carter ran the Ayatollah out of Iran. Jimmy Carter brought the, excuse me, let's start again. Jimmy Carter ran the Shah out of Iran.
Yeah.
Jimmy Carter let the Ayatollah come back from Paris. The Ayatollah was in exile in Paris. The Ayatollah came back to Iran, and the Ayatollah disseminated radical Islam throughout the world. He was sort of the virus of radical Islam. So who did this? Jimmy Carter with his peace stick mentality. I am not a fan of pacifism in the face of fascism. Have we learned nothing from history? Have we learned nothing from what dictators will do when they see weakness?
Oh, well, I don't know, Michael. You paint a very sad picture here going forward on a day that a lot of people have some hope.
They do have hope. They had hope in Cuba, too. When the Castro brothers threw out Batista, the people danced in the streets. They had great hope. And guess what? Many of them are very happy right now. They play dominoes and they have 1955 Buicks. I probably don't want to live playing dominoes. What about the political dissidents? Let's talk about that. Why would Charles Schumer, an educated man, I believe he went to Harvard, why would he say today he's in favor of the fairness doctrine, which would target, I don't care if you're a real liberal, I like real liberals. They're my best friends. They truly believe in the First Amendment. What would you call Charles Schumer who says that we don't like pornography on the televisions, and we also don't like political speech we disagree with, in essence? He's comparing political speech he disagrees with pornography. What does that say about Charles Schumer?
Yeah, I agree with you. That is absolutely, absolutely dangerous, and I hope that doesn't happen.
Look, we may disagree politically on so many things, but listen. True liberals say, I may disagree with what you say, but I fight to the death your right to say it.
Right.
What happened to that? What happened to understanding what satire, sarcasm is? And I want to remind my audience of one more important thing. The First Amendment was written by the founders of the Constitution to protect not polite speech, but to protect offensive speech. Speech that made people angry. Speech that was in the minority. Speech that shook up the establishment. What the heck is wrong with the liberals if they don't understand their own constitution?
Well, that was last night on the back of the boat. I think it was a very good talk for a man with two glasses of wine in him, and I didn't slur, I didn't slip. I made a very good speech to my audience in New York, and I want to thank all of you around America for listening to the replay. I'm quite impressed with myself, as usual. Not always. Sometimes I'm down on myself. I'm a pretty harsh critic of myself, probably the worst of all my critics is me, myself, and I. And here we are. So there we are. And it brings us right back to the center. Phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I think that you've heard the dissection of the election already from everybody in radio and in the news. And now what? What are you going to listen to? How much can you listen to this? We know that McCain was the worst choice possible. We know that McCain ran the worst campaign possible. Whether he threw it or not is open to discussion, because I think he may have. What you're not reading about today and what you should read about today is that gay marriage was clearly defeated by large majorities in three states. They spent a fortune trying to hoodwink the American people into accepting a behavior. Let's put it to you that way. A behavioral choice that the average decent American rejected. And 7 out of 10 blacks who voted for Obama, by the way, rejected gay marriage. What does that tell you?
Savage.
Now, I want to read something to you from Psychological Nudity, because many of you do know who I am and many of you don't. I grew up in Queens, New York, and I grew up in a time when we had a rifle team in the basement of Jamaica High School, and I was on it. And I want to read you one page from Psychological Nudity, page 77. What did I have in my mind when I was shooting targets? Do you know that there was a rifle team in my high school when I was a youth? At Jamaica High School in Queens, we had a rifle team. Nobody picked up a gun then and ran through the hall shooting anybody. Why? A, there was no psychotic medication. There was no Prozac. There was no Ritalin. Nobody was crazy. At that point in America, at that time, if you were crazy, you weren't in high school. You were already filtered out earlier on. By the fourth, fifth grade, they knew if you were a nut, and they put you into a nut house. But you didn't get into high school. They filtered you out. They didn't ask questions. They said, who's that nut over there in the second row? What's he doing there reaching into his trousers in the middle of geometry class? Get him out of here. They'd call the marshals and throw the kid out or whatever. They didn't ask permission for some whack job psychotic criminal with a medical history whether they could throw him out. They threw him out. The lawyers were not out of control in those days either. But to get back to the story, we had Mossberg 22 target rifles. To this day, I can remember being in the basement of that school. Remember now, we're talking New York City rifle team. I could smell the gunpowder. To this day, I can hear the shots being fired. I would come up from that rifle experience, my head was clearer, and I was able to focus better on school because I wasn't bored anymore. The report of the rifle, the smell of the gunpowder, the camaraderie, and more importantly, the men who taught us riflery were all World War II or Korean War veterans, every one of them. That's who was teaching in those days. Compare it to today, to the Marvins that they got, who tell you it's okay if you feel like putting on your mother's wig. That's from page 77, Psychological Nudity. Now you understand why you have to get this book as soon as possible. Now I'm going to jump from there to some stories that are a must directly related to this. Michael Savage, rifle team in high school. Let's go to the police forces of the United States of America today. Muslim suit over scarves in California jail settled. California County will allow jailed Muslim women to wear scarves after settling a suit with a woman who claims deputies violated her religious freedom by making her remove her hijab. Now, this is a ruse. This is a complete ruse to weaken our police. Now, jump down to a story on MichaelSavage.com if you want to see that one. Now, compare it to a story down on the left. How far down is it here? I hope it's, there it is. L.A. Noir, Tales from the Gangster Squad, Los Angeles Times. The Gangster Squad was formed in 1946 to keep East Coast Mafia out of Los Angeles. Now, who did they hire? Who did the L.A. police hire in 1946 to stop the mafia from penetrating Los Angeles? According to this article, they hired the toughest boys who came back from World War II. Pilots, Marines, soldiers. These were big, brawny, tough men. But guess what? They were given a mandate. Keep them out of L.A. Don't let them get a grip. And so they got these guys. They took them up to Mulholland Drive. They put guns in their mouth or they killed them. They didn't worry about what they had to do to stop the gangsters from taking over. Now, let's go to Los Angeles today, 2008. Gangs control Los Angeles. There are districts the police will not even go into. What is the L.A. police force comprised of? There are still some tough ex-Marines, ex-military, nakedly tough men. But by and large, it's been a gelded force like every other police force in America. You've got women, you've got gays, you've got lesbians, you've got unqualified minorities left and right in the police force. They're using it as a sort of social advancement. They're not the tough guys from World War II who would do anything to stop the gangs. They themselves are afraid of the gangs, which is why the gangs have taken over. San Francisco, good police, tough police, strong as iron, to about an 80th percentile. Police chief, woman. Type of woman, has not qualified with a pistol for over 2 years. Size of woman, short woman. A little woman. Her lady friends are in the leadership positions in the SFPD. The San Francisco Police Department has legions of gays and lesbians in it. Is it a city that is crime-free? No. It is a city that has an out-of-control homicide rate. It's a city that protects Salvadoran drug dealers. It's a city that protects juvenile drug dealers from Central America. It's a city that has police that have been controlled by the weaklings in the department. That's a symptom of what has gone on. That's an example, rather, of what happens when liberalism takes over a city. Let me go back again. L.A. Noir, Tales from the Gangster Squad. Gangster Squad formed in L.A. in 1946. Big, brawny, tough men, war heroes, B-25 pilots. They came back from killing Germans to keep Los Angeles gangster-free, and they did a good job at it. Los Angeles today, any police department today, the 80% of tough men are controlled by the 20% of weaklings and perverts in their own police departments. That's what's coming to a military near you. That's what's coming to America. That's your choice tonight. Make a decision. Do you want to live in fear of the gangs, or do you want to control the gangs? You've got a clear choice. War hero or Marxist revolutionary?
Savage.
Well, you made your choice, so you know what's coming. You know exactly what's coming. Après moi, le déluge. Welcome back to the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to the callers. Andrea, South Carolina, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Good evening, Michael. I'm a 39-year-old mother of two very small children, a 4-year-old and a 3-month-old, and I cried in my coffee this morning, and I feel like I'm going to cry again over the outcome of this election.
What is it that you fear about an Obama presidency now that it's here?
Because I remember in grade school the fallout shelter symbols. I remember them telling us to go under our desks and we practice for nuclear warfare. I'm afraid of the Koreans and of the Middle Easterns and of the Chinese, and I don't think Obama's going to do anything except sit down at a table, put out his hand, put a big grin on his face and go, I want to be your friend. We can't be friends with these people. You know, we just...
But he thinks we can. He thinks he can negotiate with terrorists armed with nukes. I guess he hasn't read the history of Neville Chamberlain in England, who came back from Germany and said, I've just signed a peace treaty with Chancellor Hitler. And he promises me there'll be no more aggression. I have said, and I said it 6 months ago, that Obama, in one regard, in foreign policy, approximates Neville Chamberlain more than anyone else. The pacifist socialist wing of the Democrat Party is going to control foreign policy. And make no mistake about it, it could be a disaster for this country. I don't think you're alone in your fears.
I'm afraid for my nephews in the military. I'm afraid he's going to slash the budget as soon as he gets into office. And these boys have fought in Iraq. And I hope he's gone in 4 years. We've got to just get him out and get the Republicans and the conservatives.
Well, 4 years is a very long time. You understand that a lot of terrible things could happen in 4 years. Already one of them has already happened. The stock market has taken its steepest dive after an election in modern American history. Do you know that?
Yes, it's horrible.
I guess they could blame that on racism because most of the people in the stock market are white. They could claim that the stock market is now racist. They could say that Dow and Jones are not black and that's why it dropped.
Well, Michael, I just want you to
look,
know.
Look, Obama's the first, let's put it this way, he's the first of many things. He's the first black president. He's also the first affirmative action president. Many whites voted strictly out of guilt, white liberal guilt. But the majority of people who voted for him didn't vote for him. They voted against the corruption of the Republican Party. They voted against the corruption of George Bush. They voted against the bailout of the gangsters on Wall Street. They voted against the Bush mandates more so than they voted for Obama, because Obama's a fairly unknown personality. They don't really know who he is. You know that as well.
I just want you to know.
Thank you for the call. Let's not worry so much. Let's have hope. Let's all have hope. And change. Let's hope for America. Let's have hope for America. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. Atlanta, Georgia. L, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
The people voted for a socialist society. So that's freedom. So what are you crying about?
I'm not crying at all. What are you crying about?
I listen. I'm listening to you. I listen to you a lot.
So I'm not crying about anything. Just because some people voted for him doesn't mean that he's going to have a socialist government. You understand that or not?
Oh, I understand.
I mean, did Obama run as a socialist or did he not? He ran as a centrist, didn't he?
I've heard you over the last month talking about...
Excuse me, my friend. Did Obama come out and say, I am a socialist, and if you want socialism, choose me? No, he ran as a centrist. I don't know that there's a mandate for socialism because Obama won, do you?
Did you say he was a Marxist?
I believe he is. By his writings, by his speeches, by his associations, I believe he is a Marxist, yes. Does that mean he will initiate Marxism? No. It's very difficult to change an economic system overnight. You understand that?
Exactly. Just like you said, he had socialist tendencies, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so the people voted for socialists.
I disagree with you on that. Some people voted for socialism. I would say the majority of Americans who voted for Obama don't even know what his policies are. I think they just like him because he's young, he's dynamic, he's good-looking, and he is not George Bush. They wanted something other than the corrupt Republican George Bush. You have to admit that's possibly true, Al, as well. Don't you agree with that?
Exactly. That's exactly true. People don't understand because I'm a black Democrat. People don't understand what socialism is. They just see a black man. So all I'm saying is that was the mistake of what you call your founding fathers in the Constitution by letting the people choose. Because once they don't understand, it's a problem.
Well, I wouldn't say the Founding Fathers made a mistake. It was a totally different world at that time. It's a different world than it is today. A very wise writer many hundreds of years ago said that once democracy eventually will vote itself out of democracy and into a dictatorship. Once the masses of the people have the right to vote, they're going to vote themselves raises, they're going to vote themselves welfare, they're going to vote themselves high taxation on the worker, and you're going to have socialism in either case. So it may be inevitable. I don't think it's going to happen so quickly, but look, the fact of the matter is, I have to go back to my primary point. The majority of people who voted for Obama, and remember, it was not a landslide. It was a fairly, you got to remember, there were like 48 million people who voted for Sad Sack McCain. So it wasn't like an 80-20, you know that. It was like a 52-48. But he won. But I don't believe the majority voted for him. I believe the majority voted against George Bush and his policies. I think you have to agree with that.
Oh yes, they did, and at the same time, they voted for what they maybe not understandingly believe in.
All right, we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see how far to the left Obama really can go. Remember who has surrounded him. Who surrounds him? Rahm Emanuel is no Marxist. Howard Dean is no Marxist. Nancy Pelosi is one of the richest women in the world. They're no Marxists. You understand that, Al?
Oh, I understand that. I don't believe Obama is a Marxist. I'm just going by what you have said.
All right. Okay. Well, I'm glad you said that. You don't believe he is. What do you believe his policies really are?
I believe his policies are to bring this country back to, not back to, bring to a different, as far as how you always go back to the Constitution. The Constitution has amendments. So amendment is a change, which is basically a mistake. So they had to change it to fix it. So
Interesting. See, I listen to people when they call, even if they're a little slower than you'd like or speak in a different accent, because I'm different and I speak in a different accent, but I listen to you. You're actually making sense. I may not agree with what you're saying, but in your way, you're making sense. So what are you saying then really about Obama? What do you think he is politically?
Politically, I think he is...
Well, I'll tell you what I think, and then you'll tell me if you agree with me. How do you explain that he raised $600 million, a lot of it through credit cards from unknown sources, including what we think are foreign donations? Doesn't that bother you?
He learned from the best.
But don't you think that you should be worried that an unknown candidate who nobody knew of 2 years ago could raise $600 million, a lot of it in small donations on credit cards, and many of us fear it came from Saudi Arabia or the Middle East? Shouldn't that worry you as an American, Al?
I was worried how Clinton raised money, how Bush raised money. I mean, all of it is politics.
I actually agree with you. I was concerned that after George Bush left office, he was given a $3 million speaking fee in Japan, I think. I understand what you're saying. I was concerned that after Clinton left office, he made millions and millions of dollars a month. I was very concerned about that. I mean, who was paying him that kind of money?
There's all sorts
of corruption in the political world, Al. I think that's the middle name. But to me, it all comes down to personal freedom and national security. Those are the two things I care more about than anything else. Personal freedom, I don't want to see a fairness doctrine. Do you want to see a fairness doctrine? Would you like to hear a man like me banned from radio? Let me ask you that.
No, I absolutely would not.
Why would you want me not banned? I'd like to know that. I'd like to hear why you as a liberal would like me to continue speaking on the radio. This is very important.
Because I just heard a couple of minutes ago you said your part, I don't know if your party, but you said a Republican needs a person, regardless of race. You named off a lot of races, and you said regardless of race, you just need that type of person. That's why I still continue to listen to you, and that's why I have listened to you, because I don't think, nobody knows, but I don't think that's an issue with you. My understanding is that your issue is with freedom.
That's correct. My issue is with personal freedom and national security, and I really don't care what it is packaged in, and I've said that repeatedly, and I probably am the only person who is white, the only white person in radio, that is, who has spent many a night sleeping in huts with all black people in the South Pacific. And now that's a fact of reality. I don't talk about it, nor am I wearing it on my sleeve as some honor. It just is the truth. And the definition to me of a racist is someone who would not spend that much time in a house, in a straw hut in a house, for weeks on end with people of another race. The definition of a racist is someone who could not tolerate someone from another race. You know that as well as I do.
I
know pretty much where you're coming from. I grew up in a multiracial city. Sure, most of my friends were from my background in New York because we lived in the same neighborhood. But I'm looking at my high school yearbook. I had a Korean friend. I had black friends who signed the book. I remember them. I've never had a problem in that regard. And I hope the others don't have a problem with me in that regard. And I think that race is a big issue that we have to talk about. And I'm so glad that we talked about it that I'm going to send you a free copy of Psychological Nudity, L. Without you even naming a story, all I ask is that you read it and enjoy it. I'll be right back. Let's pull back for a minute. Let's look at this in the big picture. Almost 50 million people voted for McCain, the saddest candidate in modern history with the worst campaign. The people who elected Obama didn't so much vote for Obama's, let us say, Marxist tendencies as they did to vote against Bush, the corrupt Republicans in Congress, the totally inarticulate, bumbling fool in the White House, and profligate spending. And he's a young, handsome, dynamic, articulate man. Who wouldn't want to vote for him if you don't care about politics? The taxpayer bailout plan, Schmendrick McCain runs and says, I'm voting for it, spits in the face of the fiscal Republicans, fiscal conservatives. And so there's a lesson in that. Don't assume the country wants to go to the left, because as I point out on my website, in three states where the people could speak, they voted against homosexual marriage. In the one state where they can vote on affirmative action, they voted against affirmative action. Now, you look at New York City. Let's look at fiscal realities today. The stock market has the biggest post-election slump in history the day after Obama is elected. Why? They fear regulation and taxation, two economy killers. So this will give Obama a real lesson in economics that he didn't learn at Harvard. That's number one. He can no longer be the professor in the ivory tower, nor can they sit and salute him anymore. Now the guy has to run the country and run the world. That's a little different than running for office, okay? Now, let's look at New York. You got a phony there named, another phony Republican named Bloomberg. Yet he's elected to a third term. How? How? With enough money, you can elect virtually anybody to office. The guy has term limits. He overcomes term limits by buying off the city council. And what does he do the day after he runs again, Bloomberg? Sorry, the $400 million tax, the rebates are over. Income tax, I'm sorry, property tax rebates, I'm canceling them. And by the way, says Bloomberg, we're going to raise income tax to 15%, a 50% raise of income tax in New York City. There's the phony Republican through and through.
Savage.
Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
He is our first African-American president, or he will be, and we wish him well. But his choice, basically, is whether he's going to be Uncle Sam for the people of this country or Uncle Tom for the giant corporation.
Look, I don't like bullies like you. I can't see you. You can pull the plug on me. I'm looking in a dark camera.
You so said let's, Uncle let's Tom. Have, I let, didn't let's say have, it, sir, with respect.
Let,
I did
let
not
Let us
say
have...
It.
I said that's the question he has to answer. He can become a great president, or he can become a toady for the corporate powers that have brought both parties to their knees against working people in this country.
Welcome to the biggest hangover day of the year, the day after the longest, most horrendous election in American history, a choice between... Well, two words I can't use on the Savage Nation because it is radio after all. There's good news as well. Affirmative action banned where the people could speak. Homosexual marriage thrown out the door in three states. Despite the largest spending in history by the homosexual radicals, they lost in all three states. You're not going to read that in your morning paper, of course, because you know who writes the papers, don't you? The people who have put the papers out of business write the paper. That's why you stop reading papers. The big winners in this election are Michael Savage, because I'm a declared independent, have been for 15 years. I didn't suddenly identify myself as that to get a radio show. And CNN. Both of the other cable networks are too closely tied to one party or the other. They're going to lose. The biggest losers are Newt Gingrich and his ilk, that type of bloated old line Republican. People are fed up with their double talk. Fox News, I'm sorry to say, too closely tied to the Republican brand. Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, very nice guys, too closely tied to the Bush machine and Republicans. They're also losers. And that's it. That's my view of things. 1-800-449-8255 for your view of things. MichaelSavage.com for the stories that I deem of interest to you, you know. There it is. Did you know, by the way, something that you didn't read, and I've talked about it a little bit. I'm going to talk about it another bit. In California, where we had a ballot initiative on homosexual marriage, black voters naturally came out and voted for Obama. You know that. I mean, there's no secret about that. But are you aware of a little-known fact that exit poll data showed that 7 in 10 black voters backed the initiative which banned homosexual marriage? You didn't know that. So although the radicals, the gay radicals, think that black people can easily be bamboozled, in essence, they look down upon them. I mean, look, I have to tell you the way I see it. They figure they're going to be hoodwinked and they're going to ride Obama's coattails. They did the opposite. The black voters voted overwhelmingly for Obama and overwhelmingly against gay marriage. Why? It's not because they hate gays necessarily, although I'm sure some do. But they were raised to believe that marriage is between a man and a woman. Most blacks in California are Christians, and they voted against homosexual marriage, not against homosexuals. They don't like having this agenda forced on them. And moreover, if you look deeply into it, you find that many of the voters against homosexual marriage did so because they didn't want young children being taught about homosexual marriage in schools, and they knew that that would happen. They knew it because it's happening already. They also know that this clown, Annie Toussaint Newsom, had the nerve to bus children and kindergartners into City Hall to watch a lesbian marriage. And so Gavin Newsom, rightly so, became the poster boy of what everything wrong with this state and this country. And if this guy thinks he's going to be governor, then he may need a new psychiatrist. That's all I can say. This guy is finished in his run for the governorship. I'm not a fan of Dianne Feinstein, but she could easily become governor after this. Although she supported homosexual marriage, she was not the poster girl for it. That shows you the difference in one politician and another. Jerry Brown, finished. He may as well go open a monastery somewhere in Nepal, because this guy so screwed himself by tying himself too closely to the homosexual agenda that even he should know it by now. I overheard people talking in a mall today. They looked like liberals to me, and I think they voted for Obama by what I could tell. But they were so angry at Jerry Brown for having twisted the language of the ballot initiative to make it confusing to the voter that they said they're never going to vote for him again. And rightly so. Once a moonbeam, always a moonbeam. Now, I was hoodwinked by Jerry Brown. A friend of mine told me he had become moderate, he moved to the middle, he's more conservative than you think. And I went to one of Jerry Brown's private dinners where he supported a military institute in Oakland. I said, you know what, he's not a bad guy. But when I see that this guy has come out like a lunatic in favor of controlling emissions for global warming, whenever he knows it's a lie, and he's owned lock, stock, and barrel by the gay movement, I said, you know what, once a moonbeam, always a moonbeam. Goodbye, Charlie. I don't want to even, you know, go to any more of these dinners where these people appear. They make my flesh crawl. I feel like I need to take a bath in brown soap after sitting around politicians. I never associated with them, and I never will. Phone number here, 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com website. There is good news out there. It's not all dark news, and it's not all bad news. And let's get past the election already. What happened the next day? Stock market took the biggest dive in post-election history. Why? Because everyone on Wall Street's a racist? No. Because they're afraid of regulation and taxation, two business killers, coming from Obama. So he already may have awakened from his fantasy of suddenly he has a wand, a magic wand. You know, the stock market's very emotional to begin with. And it's been in trouble to begin with, you know. So here we are. Here we are. Let's go to the callers. Ohio, Joe, you're on the Savage Nation. You're not Joe the plumber, are you?
No, I'm not, Mike. Mike, I got your book about a week and a half ago, and when I looked at the cover, it was everything you had described, but it reminded me, in a sense, of a Rorschach drawing, in that, depending on my mood or who I showed the book to, people pointed out different things. First thing I noticed was the Ray-Ban sunglasses. I've been wearing Ray-Bans for 20 years.
Yeah, I have too. I started wearing them 20 years ago because they were the most comfortable sunglasses.
Yes, they are. My dad noticed the hat.
The Gucci hat.
The Gucci hat. My girlfriend loves dogs, of course, commented on Teddy.
Yeah.
Teddy's hair, Teddy's eyes, Teddy's canines. And then we were trying to figure out what it was that was wrapped around Teddy. It almost looks like an Italian tablecloth or some type of napkin.
No. That was a party I had 2 years ago, and Teddy was made a Hawaiian outfit because it was the theme was a Hawaiian hula party. So we ordered him a hula outfit, a little Hawaiian hula dress. Not a dress, a hula, cloak, whatever. And I think it goes very well with the orange shirt that I'm wearing. What else? Now, let's go to the beard. How about people who are afraid of hair, they don't like the beard? Then people who like hair like the beard.
Right. And I used to have real long hair, and I noticed that it seems like you have hair falling off your collar.
You looked at the left side. It's funny. If I had seen that in the picture, I would have cut it out. I don't like that wisp of hair on the back. Yeah. No, it is. It's interesting what people – and, it's the same with a book in general, Joe. You can read a story and see things in it that you want to see, or see things I thought you would see and not see it. Maybe Charles Schumer will ban my books as well as my radio show. Charles Schumer could say he's a real big liberal. I went to Harvard. I'm from Brooklyn. And I certainly don't believe in censorship. But I believe we shouldn't have certain books published in America because they don't agree with me politically. Charles Schumer is the biggest shame in American political history. What a big jerk he is to come out and say that political speech he disagrees with is the equivalent of pornography. What a big loser that Charles Schumer is. How anyone in Brooklyn could not see the fascistic tendencies of this jerk, I don't understand it, Joe. Thank you for calling. Phone number, website, You know that today's like the first day of a new year. It's like Auld Lang Syne Day, right? Don't you feel like you got drunk last night and you're hungover? I'll be right back.
Savage.
My friends, we have come to the end of a long journey. The American people have spoken, and they have spoken clearly. A little while ago, I had the honor of calling Senator Barack Obama to congratulate him. Please.
To all those watching tonight from beyond our shores, from parliaments and palaces, to those who are huddled around radios in the forgotten corners of the world, our stories are singular, but our destiny is shared. And a new dawn of American leadership is at hand.
All right, a new dawn, wonderful. Now that you've won, now rule. Now do something about the stock market tanking out of fear that you'll overregulate and overtax. Let's put aside Marxism and socialism and where you were born. Okay, now you won. You got a, whatever it was, American money or Saudi money. Good. Now you're the leader of the free world. What are you going to do with it? Well, the market took a little minor stroke today. A little petite mal epileptic attack out of fear of your regulation and taxation. That's A. Now let's see what you do with the military. What are you going to do? Gut the military because Barbara Boxer hates BB guns? Day after day, homosexual marriage tossed out in three states. The people spoke. So the people spoke. They elected Barack Obama. Did they love Obama? They don't even know who he is. But he's a handsome man. He's an articulate man. And I say give him a chance. Let's give him a chance. Even radicals can wake up when they suddenly ascend to power. It's happened before. And I believe that this man has the potential to move to the center. Whether he will move to the left or to the center is a real question. And it's a question of just how wed he is to the ideology that got him elected. I don't know. We don't know. Nobody knows. That's the thing. We gambled. We gave the keys to the kingdom to an unknown. Why? Because we had a corrupt, inarticulate individual running the country for so long that America chose a young, articulate, handsome man who jogs and exercises and plays basketball. They chose youth over almost like an incompetent lunatic. The man couldn't finish a paragraph without making a mockery of the English language. That was the leader of the free world? I know conservatives who used to cringe every time Bush made a speech. They couldn't take it. It was no longer charming. It was no longer humorous. Their toes would curl up inside their shoes when this man got up and mangled the English language. They'd ask over and over again, is this guy on drugs? Is he stupid? What's wrong with him? I heard it over and over again. So don't think the people are that dopey. Did they really know whether his policies were liberal, conservative? I'm not sure if they even knew. A majority of the youth vote just liked that he was young. That's number one. So we'll have to see. All I know is this. This I know for a fact. Ballot initiatives, state ballot initiatives, are where real direct democracy is tested. You understand? That's where real democracy is tested. We have a choice that's so clear on various issues, homosexual marriage, affirmative action, gambling, marijuana. All of these things are where the people are really tested and where you really hear their voice. Now, I am not in favor of legalizing marijuana, but the majority of people are, by the way. They're addicted to the drug. They think it's benign when it's the most dangerous drug in the world because it's a drug that appears to be benign. But they want their drugs, give them their drugs. They want their gambling, they're going to get their gambling. But guess what? They didn't want homosexual marriage. Because when it comes to children, children are sacred. They didn't want it. They threw it out in three states, California, Arizona, Florida. And as I'll repeat over and over again for the next 3 months, 7 out of 10 black voters in California voted against homosexual marriage. How do you explain that? Because they're not as stupid as Gavin Newsom and Jerry Brown think they are. They're not as stupid. They're not on their plantation. You understand that? Hawaii, Michelle, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I know your time is valuable. I'll make this brief. I am not a lemon. I do not support Barack Obama. Never did. I didn't vote for him. And I'm very upset because basically he does not believe in our conservative values. Borders, language, and culture.
Yeah, but wait, hold it. I agree with you. But did John McCain believe in borders? No. Did John McCain support language, English only, in the ballot box amongst other places? Never. Did he believe in the cultural foundations of America? Maybe. I don't know. He never talked about them. It was like John McCain was a nun candidate. You had Barack Obama running against a nun candidate, an old man, who on top of it all chose an inexperienced woman as his running mate. The stupidest thing he ever did.
You know what, Dr. Savage, I would not be surprised if this was done on purpose. If they said,
well, now you're starting to agree with my conspiracy theory that McCain was chosen as a fall guy because the Republicans knew they had bankrupted America and they wanted to throw a hot potato in a Democrat's hands. Why isn't that a possibility?
Well, we all know
and
that.
No, think about this. Let's say you're a Republican genius, and you know you bankrupted America, you robbed the Treasury, you stole as much as you could, you exported as many jobs as possible, you moved as many factories overboard as overseas as possible. So now you bankrupted the country, and what do you do now? Well, you turn it over to the Democrats, and they fall on their face, and then you bring back the man you've held in reserve who you didn't want to lose, named Romney. So then you get the party back again that way with another centrist disguising himself as a Republican. You know, another check pants Republican. Michelle, I'm going to send you a free copy of Psychological Nudity. If you can name one story that you're dying to read, name it.
I haven't been on your website, but I recall that there is a story that you told about riding in the car with your father to work and you want to turn the radio on and he turned it off.
Okay. You're a sweetheart. I'm going to give you a free book anyway. Why won't you go on my website? You don't have a computer?
No, actually, I have. I just haven't been on there lately.
All right. That's okay. You stay in the line. You're getting a free copy, Michelle, sent out to Hawaii, where I think I'm going to go next week, hopefully. Whenever you're off, I'm leaving one place, then I'm going to go to another. I need to get away from this 2 years now. I mean, you got to admit, Mike has the ever-ready battery gene. Come on. Who could have put up with this? You know how many years this has been going on already, this election? It seems like it's been going on since the 19th century. It's over. Thank God it's over. Now what? Now he's got to rule. Now that he won, let him rule. Okay, let's see what happens. Let's give him our blessings, truthfully. I mean, I'm gonna warn you that I don't suspect he's going to run to the center. He's going to rule to the center. I think he's going to rule to the left. But let's give the man a chance. I believe that he's going to get some briefings that are going to scare him to death. And he's going to say, holy God, I had no idea. Or maybe I'm naive, and he's already gotten the briefings, and he's going to hijack us.
Savage.
You know, with the left wing trying to remove any mention of God from our society, the resultant moral decay is destroying our country from the inside out. In a time where we need to confront the existential threat of radical Islam, the rising secularism is actually causing a failure of our country's resolve to even understand the danger it's in. Our next guest is Herbert London. He's the president of the Hudson Institute, and his book is entitled America's Secular Challenge, The Rise of a New National Religion. Herbert London, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Pleasure to be with you.
Well, what's the main message behind your book?
Well, I regard this book as a wake-up call to Americans. My own feeling is that, considering the kind of threat that we are facing on the world stage, it is important for Americans to develop the appropriate armor to deal with this new threat. And obviously, the threat is radical Islam. As Arnold Toynbee once pointed out, civilizations do not necessarily die of murder, they die of suicide. It is the internal weaknesses, the loss of confidence, the inability to stand by your traditions that very often counts for the fall of a civilization. And I'm very much concerned about what I regard as the confluence of various kinds of conditions in the United States that add up to what I've described as a new religion, a religion based on multiculturalism, a transnational progressivism, atheism, moral relativism, and a loss of confidence in the United States. These are the conditions that now operate to create what is ostensibly a faith, a belief that the United States is no longer the country that will dictate the future, but in fact will be very different indeed. Different in large part because of these conditions that are now changing the character of the United States. And these people, by and large, want to undermine the very character of our nation, which is based on the Judeo-Christian tradition. That tradition not only served the United States very effectively for more than 200 years, but serves as the foundation stone for what America is as a nation. Our Constitution is, by and large, a document that comes out of this tradition, this very significant Judeo-Christian tradition. And our Declaration of Independence is quite obviously a document organized around this tradition as well. So if you want to change America, one of the ways to change it is through radical secularism. And this radical secularism is the new religion, rather insidious religion, that is changing the character of the nation as we speak.
Well, I know what's causing this downfall, and so do you. I've read your book. But how do you think this country let it get to this point?
Well, one, I think, is a loss of confidence in the United States, as I've indicated, a constant drumbeat of criticism that has emerged in our schools and in our press and among journalists and on TV. This drumbeat, unquestionably, has had an effect on the confidence that people feel, as well as introducing and insinuating a kind of self-doubt into what Americans think about their future. That self-doubt, that loss of confidence, I think, are factors that have had a profound effect on the way in which Americans think about the future. Bryce once described the 20th century as the American century. And then, of course, there were many people who embraced it. It was a source of optimism. The future is ours, and that future will be dictated to some degree by the character of the United States, by our willingness to spread our liberties and our understanding and our prosperity across the globe. And to some degree, that's happened. But we have now lost a sense of that confidence. And while radical secularists may represent a small number of people in the United States, their influence is far greater than their numbers might suggest. And if you want to get a sense of that, all you have to do is read the New York Times editorial page, which is the embodiment of this, what I'm describing as radical secular spirit.
What about the liberals' argument of separation of church and state and how it's illegal to push our beliefs onto others?
I am absolutely a defender of the separation of church and state, although not in our Constitution. Our Constitution talks about the free exercise of religion and certainly is opposed to the idea of creating a theocracy. I'm not in favor of the theocracy, nor am I opposed to the idea of the separation of church and state. But I want to make something perfectly clear to you. What is important is to understand the relationship of the Judeo-Christian tradition to the emergence of the political entity we call the United States of America. Our Constitution is ostensibly an Augustinian document predicated in the idea that since people are fallible, we need a system of checks and balances. That system of checks and balances emerged as a tripartite government. That is not coincidental. It emerged directly from the Judeo-Christian tradition. The second point I want to make is that if you look at the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson, a deist, I might add, used the expression, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. Why is that important? Because if God gives us those rights cannot be taken away. If a state confers rights, those rights can easily be taken away. And it's important to understand the difference between the two. What distinguishes the United States from most other countries in the world is that our rights are God-given. We might try to change them. We might even try to refine them. We might even try to reduce them. But we cannot eliminate them, largely because they are God-given.
Well, we both know the moral relativism is speeding our demise, but why so? I mean, how did we get here? This used to be a Christian nation.
Well, let me try to put a little perspective on this matter. Look, the argument is very often made that all we have is situational ethics. Nothing is true. All truth has become a kind of social construct. As a result, no one knows really what is true. And you might even say that even epistemology is nothing more than a power play, with some involved in the academic community making the argument that their discipline is more powerful and the arguments more compelling than the arguments of others, so that nothing is true. All truth is largely the social construct. And I remember being in the university and having an office on the 9th floor when people would come into my office and make this argument. I'd walk them to the elevator, and I would say, you know something, if there is no truth, gentlemen, I prefer that you leave from the window of the 9th floor. Let's test the proposition of whether there's truth or not. Tell me that there isn't any gravity, because after all, it's only relative. They never took me up on that proposition. And most people don't, because there are truths, and most people understand that. It is a truth that the United States of America has been an exceptional nation, with all of its blemishes, with all of its imperfections, with all of its difficulties, with all of its mistakes. It is still the great model for the, not just for Americans, it's the model for the world. It's not coincidental that when those young people at Tiananmen Square in 1988 were building a monument to their future, they didn't build one for the Prophet Muhammad or even the Eiffel Tower. They built a model of the Statue of Liberty. And they built that Statue of Liberty in large part because they recognized that the liberties they aspired to are the liberties already enjoyed by Americans. Those liberties, that kind of sense of Americans, the American future, is something that's embraced by people everywhere who are allowed to express their opinion and state what they would like to see in their own lives. And that American model is a model, if changed, that could undermine the very character of nations, not only here, not only in the United States, but nations across the globe.
Well, without a distinction of right or wrong, how can you make judgments on good or evil?
Well, that's precisely the problem. I mean, Jefferson made the point when he was asked about an educational system. What are the primary, the focus of an American educational system? And you would think he would have said reading and writing. And clearly he did say that should be incorporated into all kinds of education. But he made the point that the overarching consideration should be the distinction between right and wrong. And the very thing that we've lost in the pedagogy of the moment is the distinction between right and wrong, which is very often overlooked. And instead of kids saying this is right and this is wrong, all we have is the exchange of ignorant opinion. Well, this is what I think, this is what you think, after all, this is another kind of society. And this kind of relativism, I think, has a profound effect on undermining kind of rational thought. Look at the radical feminists in the United States who argue that we're living in a society of oppression. And what is the evidence for that? That the disparity in income between men and women. Women presumably earn 80% of what a man earns, and they call that oppression. And yet the same feminists say relatively little about the genital mutilation that occurs all over the Muslim world, where women are obliged to engage in clitoridectomies. And the argument very often an anthropological one, where they say, who are we to tell these women how they should conduct themselves or how these societies should conduct themselves? Well, there is a universal standard. The abuse of women is not something that simply should be seen within the context of the American society, but should be seen globally. If abuse of women occurred, that should be stated. We should understand that. There is a wrong and a right associated with the way in which women are treated. And so it's absurd to simply make the argument, the anthropological argument, that this is all relative.
With the media being what it is, and Hollywood mostly trying to lead us down the wrong road, what can we do with such powers?
Well, I think that there's a lot that we can do. One, I think that we have to recapture our educational institutions. We have gone through a revolution in American education with the establishment of an orthodoxy. It is ostensibly a left-wing orthodoxy, and that orthodoxy is predicated in the ideas that truth is known. And what we have to do is those people who don't know it, we're going to preach it, we're going to proselytize, we're going to use the university as an instrument for changing the American culture. And they've won. I mean, Gramsci was absolutely correct. Antonio Gramsci, the Italian communist who had a strategy for taking over the institutions, marching through the institutions, he was correct. They've done it. And now we have to take it back, and we have to take it back one institution at a time. And we do that through what I would call an oasis strategy. We build small institutions. You know, you have Harvey Mansfield at Harvard and John Tomaso at Brown and Robbie George at Princeton. These people exist, and they exist in these various oases in this great wasteland. And what we have to do is use these oases to continue to expand our influence, and it can be done. And we have to say something about the history standards in our American schools. This is extremely important, that's particularly at the lower levels, where kids do not understand the very nature of the society and the blessing that they have to be Americans. If you ask kids today, you know, well, what did Columbus do? Well, they'd say Columbus brought disease to the New World. Well, this is what Columbus accomplished? There's nothing more that you can tell me? Well, unfortunately, if you have nothing but the drumbeat of criticism and the emphasis on all of these blemishes in American history, this is, of course, what kids would say. But as I've indicated, despite all of the blemishes, despite all of the mistakes, the United States has had extraordinary achievements that the world should understand. In the year 2000, I was asked to write an essay about what was the most important event of the last 1,000 years, and I thought long and hard about this. Was it life extension? Was it the introduction of electricity? Is it the computer? Was it the Treaty of Westphalia? Was it national states? What was the most significant accomplishment? And in the end, it was only one answer, and that was the founding of America. The founding of America provided for all of the technological, all of the political, all of the social great changes that have occurred in the last 1,000 years occurred because of the founding of this country more than 200 years ago. And I stand by that despite the mistakes that have been made and despite the blemishes in our history.
Exactly. Well, what else do you see eroding our country?
With the exception of environmentalism, which is the new paganism, there is a kind of tolerance madness where the belief is that you have to accept all points of view. George Santayana made the point many years ago, and I think a very appropriate point, that the overarching consideration of the tolerant person is to be intolerant to intolerance. That is, we have to draw the line. There are people in the United States who overlook the fact that we have sacrificed blood and treasure in order to defend our principles, our traditions. We can't give them up. We should draw a line in the sand if people are using the First Amendment to undermine the First Amendment. We should draw a line in the sand to those people who use our Constitution to destroy our Constitution. And when we have the form of preemptive surrender, when a major publishing company like Random House refuses to publish the Sherry Jones novel, which deals with the Prophet Muhammad and Naisha, the 6-year-old girl to whom he was married, largely because they're fearful of violent ramifications if the book is published, we should stand by that First Amendment. That kind of cowardice should not be permitted. And we have a State Department that tells us that the words terror and Islam cannot appear in the same sentence. We should say, I don't care what the State Department says. We believe in the First Amendment, in free speech. And when there are people in the United States who are so cowardly they will not reproduce the Danish cartoons, which were not published in any American newspaper, I think we should say, you know something, we believe in our First Amendment, and we're going to stand by that First Amendment. And so it seems to me that one of the things that we have to do is to say to Americans, look, we want to be tolerant, but there are lines that you have to draw in the sand when it comes to the protection of our freedoms, our traditions, our way of life, our Constitution, and our First Amendment.
Herbert London, great book. Thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thank you for having me on the program and allowing me to express my views. It's great being with you today.
Savage.
It's Michael Savage, the ever-ready battery man. Here I am back with you. I feel almost elated. It's over now. You know, he won the presidency. Let him rule. There's things to celebrate. The people spoke. They said no to affirmative action and no to gay marriage. So it's not 100% to the left. The country has not moved to the left. And I got to repeat over and over and over again till it sinks in. It was not so much a vote for Obama amongst the majority of those who voted for him as it was a rejection of Bush and Republicanism and cronyism. Now give Obama the shot. Let's see which way he rules. You know, it's easier to run sometime and to be an orator than it is to actually manage. And he's going to wake up, as he did today, to a stock market that collapsed, and he's going to say, okay, now what? I think that at the end of the day, he could eschew all of his radical associations in his head and say, you know what, I am the first black man to be president. What kind of legacy do I really want to leave? Do I want to please Bill Ayers and Reverend Wright and all of the radicals I grew up with? Or do I want to move past them and be a bigger man and leave a greater legacy? I don't know. Maybe that's going to happen. People change. Situations change men. I remember when I was in high school, I'll never forget it. Certain things stick in your mind. The principal, Louis Shooker, I'll never forget his name, gave a speech, and he said, I don't know, you know, you're drowsy, you're dozing off, you're not listening to a thing they say, these old guys. He said something, he said, Shakespeare said, some men are born great, some men are made great, and some men have greatness foisted upon them. So I thought about it. I said, oh, I'm not born great. I doubt that I'll ever be made great, and I don't think anyone's going to foist it upon me. So I'm stuck. I'm never going to be a great man. But in this case, Obama has had greatness foisted upon him. Now let's see what he does with it. You know, it's the beginning now, not the end. Nevada, Ty, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Mr. Savage. I accidentally turned to your channel, and I'm curious about something. I'm a gay man, and I've been hearing what you've been saying about the vote in California, and I'm curious as to what is so offensive about me having my right to vote. I mean, and to get married. It doesn't make
any
sense.
I'll give you a straight answer. Now, homosexual marriage to me is a misnomer, but that's number one. By saying that you have a right to a set of legal obligations imposed upon me, meaning you want me to sanction or approve of a behavior that I consider destructive to the self and society. That's, I think, what happened here. It doesn't mean that we hate gay people. I think that people are going to do what their impulses drive them to do. But I don't believe that it should be forced on our children through indoctrination. And if you say, well, God, that's so offensive what you just said. Arizona, California, Florida, the people think the way I do. I mean, we're all bigots. It doesn't make us bigots because we do not want to approve of a behavior that we consider destructive to the society as a law at whole.
Okay,
you don't see the behavior as destructive. That is why you engage in it. And I accept that you have a right as a free citizen in a free liberal society to engage in any behavior you want, so long as it's consensual and children aren't hurt. I understand that. But marriage is not a behavior. Marriage is a legal decision. And a society has a right to decide what shall be legal and what shall not be legal.
Right. And I understand where your logic is coming from in it, but if you're going with that logic that marriage is a legal thing, and that's all that gay marriages are trying to serve, them, I should choose who has a say when I go, when I die.
No, you shouldn't. You want to redefine marriage. Remember that you are trying to change history, natural law, and the concept of marriage itself. You're trying to redefine what the word marriage means. Now, why should this population of homosexuals have the right to redefine marriage, which is codified not only in the DNA of people throughout the world for thousands of years, but codified in the church, codified in the synagogue, codified in the Quran, codified in the Buddhist teachings? How in the world can you expect people to simply say, okay, because I want it? How is that possible?
Well, I mean, my thing is, it's a personal decision, and it should be
personal.
It
is a personal decision, right. You have a personal decision to be gay, and no one's saying you shouldn't be gay. But now you've gone past that. Now you say, I want to redefine marriage, and that you have a right to be married as a gay man. But the government has an obligation to do what is best for the society. So a government has to decide, is gay marriage something that is good for the future of a society, or is it possibly harmful? Now, what is the harm in gay marriage, they have to ask? Well, a heterosexual marriage has the potential to produce children, which is the future population of a nation. A homosexual marriage, by and large, without adoption and without artificial insemination of a woman, has no concept of the future population of the nation. It has a conceptualization only in the narcissistic self-gratification of the act itself. And society is different than the individual.
Okay.
Ty, look, I don't hate what you do. I've had gay friends when I was younger. I had them until recent, well, till 10 years ago when things changed in my life. I would like to have you understand that I'm broader than this particular topic. Let me send you a free copy of Psychological Nudity. All I ask is that you read it with a plain brown wrapper when you're around your friends, because you're liable to lose all of your friends. You may actually decide that you like me except for this issue. And if not, give it to a straight friend if you have any. 1-800-449-8255. Remember the bottom line here. This was a repudiation, not of conservatism. The exact opposite is true. There was no conservative running for the office. McCain was a phony through and through.
Savage.